Hello and welcome to another episode of History Lesson Part 2. I'm Jackson McDonald.
I'm Tyler Shipley.
Today we are going to be doing something a little different. Rather than discussing one movie, we will be discussing not the entirety of the works of one director, but we will be talking about a specific director's work rather than a singular movie. Today we'll be talking about Bong Joon-ho, specifically the sort of four major North American, or movies that have been popular for him in North America. I'm very tired. I just woke up and I haven't had my coffee yet, and I feel like I'm just vomiting word salad at everyone. But this is something that we talked about doing even before the show started, and it is something that we'll do again when there is a specific, I suppose, director or even writer whose work interests us, but that doesn't necessarily have one specific movie that we want to discuss. Tarantino is a possibility for mm-hmm. sure. Yeah. We're definitely going to do Jordan Peele.
Yes.
And it's all just going to kind of, the Tarantino one will be interesting because it's going to be a matter of like, do we actually have enough to say about each of the movies that we want to do of his that it merits its own episode, but.
Or do we have too much?
Yeah, exactly.
There's always the too much possibility as well.
Bong Joon-ho was an obvious choice to start with because I think he is maybe the most obviously like left-wing director that I can think of in terms of making I don't want to say the same type of film necessarily, but like making consistently project over project movies that have a very obviously left-wing message and that are not buried under several layers of symbolism or whatever else. Like, they're not hard to understand as left-wing films.
Yeah, and also, I mean, arguably in recent memory, the only director whose, you know, explicitly left-wing film was taken up and celebrated in the North American mainstream. Like, that's what sets, you know, his stuff apart in many ways, is the fact that Parasite sort of out of nowhere won all of those Academy Awards in 2020, which, you know, it's worth kind of talking about why that moment, you know, why did that happen? Lots of left-wing films, you know, but why all of a sudden, right, was it taken up?
Yeah, well, why that happened is going to be something that I'll be interested in discussing for sure.
I thought it might.
I guess we should, before I say my piece, I'll ask you, what made you want to do this episode? Because this was definitely your idea rather than mine.
Yeah, well, I mean, okay, so for one thing, it was, I'm interested in the fact that, you know, an explicitly left-wing movie, you know, became very popular, and not only popular with people, with audiences, but also that the sort of Hollywood establishment decided to lavish praise upon it. Like, that's just interesting to me that we had a moment where that was the case. But then, you know, secondarily, when you and I started talking about it and I discovered, you know, peeling away the layers of Jackson, that you have a bit of that you don't necessarily like the movie. And we've talked, you know, about trying to get an episode where we disagree. And I know this is going to be one because, you know, despite all of the sometimes over the top praise that it got, Parasite in particular got,
yes,
in that moment, which, yeah, I mean, could get irritating and that can certainly turn a person off. I saw it. I was fortunate to see it before it blew up and I really liked it. And I've now watched it since all of that. And I think it still holds up. And I think it still has consistent themes with his other films that are more interesting upon multiple viewings and which have subtleties that, you know, as you say, on the surface, these are very straightforward films, straightforwardly anti-capitalist films, but they also have, I think, some pretty interesting subtleties and nuances that you notice after, you know, second or third viewing. So I'm a big fan for the most part of his work. And I'm actually very interested in what it is you don't like. So that was kind of why I pushed us to do this.
Okay, well, all right. I guess we're burying the lead here somewhat. I should just clarify, because I don't think I actually said this, that the four movies that we're going to be mainly discussing here, I don't know if you've seen any other of his, any others of his.
No, I don't think
I
so.
certainly haven't. But they are in chronological order: The Host, Snowpiercer, Okja, and the aforementioned Parasite. And all four of these movies I have very complicated feelings about, I guess, except for maybe The Host. The Host is sort of the one that I have the least complicated feelings about. I just sort of feel like I thought it was pretty good, and I didn't love it, but I also didn't have any like major criticism of it necessarily. But with regards to Parasite, like complicated feelings. If I want to like drill in there and be more specific, like I both think that Parasite is his best movie of the four. I think it's the best made of the four. I think it's the one I have like the least criticism of artistically, and it's also just the one that I enjoyed the least. In the same way that like every Thanksgiving and every Christmas, there's this huge argument on Twitter where a few people talk about how much they don't like turkey and how overrated it is, and I just think they're crazy and I don't understand it. This is just like, I'm one of those people who doesn't like turkey, I guess.
Okay.
I watched it when it came out, and one a very obvious like thing that has the potential to color it for me that I'll just get out of the way right away is, yeah, I saw this movie like a year after it came out, when the hype train had fully left the station. I didn't have like the twist in it ruined for me or anything like that, but I had the this movie is about class like punched in the face with that like dozens and dozens of times. So I knew that that was going to be the deal with it, looking into it, or going into it rather. And nothing will like ruin your interpretation or your enjoyment of a movie quite like just having it built up too much and knowing too much about it going in.
Yeah, for sure.
But then I watched it again last night, thinking like, okay, I know what's up now. I'm sure I'll enjoy this time now that my expectations have lowered. And I just like couldn't get like I struggled to get through it. Like I don't know what it was specifically. The first time I saw it, I was admittedly like very gripped because so much of the movie's bag of tricks is basically like the tension and the intrigue. You know, you want to like you know something is up and you want to know what it is. At least I knew that going in. Like there's a lot of, you know, like there are good scenes that I enjoyed, and but they were way better the first time because you don't know what the outcome is going to be. So like the scene where they all have to hide under the coffee table, which is like a brilliant scene. It's very, very good. Like I remember when I saw that the first time, I was like glued to the screen. But this time it lost a lot of its magic for me, which isn't like that doesn't make it bad or anything. It's just like the ideally a movie, the rewatch value would be high, and it wouldn't, you know, like I'm trying to think. I just saw a movie not that long ago. Oh, I just rewatched Get Out over like Halloween or whatever, and that's an example to me of a movie that, like, you know, the first time I saw it, I didn't know what was up. The second time I'm, you know, rewatching it, when I know what's up, it's like watching a completely different movie where I enjoyed it on this new level of being like, oh, holy shit, it's actually completely obvious what's happening here. It's right in front of your nose and you just miss it the first time because you don't know, right? Not to compare the two movies, because they're similar but also very different. But I didn't have that feeling with Parasite. Like it wasn't like, oh wow, I'm noticing all these different things this time. It was just like, oh, okay, yeah, like when are we gonna get to the part where they open up the bunker?
See, it's funny because I have a different experience of it. Like, I found that, yeah, I mean, okay, the hiding under the table, are they gonna get caught? Tension. the second time around, no, you know they're not going to get caught in that moment, and so that's lost. But it, you know, not being focused on the kind of the suspenseful bits of it made it that I could pay more attention to and think a little bit more deeply about the more nuanced pieces. Like, you know, so here's the thing, you know, you mentioned this, I don't know if it was on air or just before, but
okay,
like,
sure.
There's something really obvious about his anti-capitalism, or
absolutely.
Or at least his criticism of capitalism, like in all of these movies.
Yes.
Right. It's really in
and
your
he
face.
Says as much too, right?
Yeah.
Like he's
exactly.
Very, very keen on telling people before, during, and after the production of the movie he's making.
Yes, exactly.
That like, oh, this movie is about capitalism.
Right. So you know it, and you know it going in, and in some cases like Snowpiercer, it's really, really obvious. And in other cases, like The Host, it's a bit more subtle, but basically you're getting hammered over the head with, you know, capitalism sucks, and you know, this is what class is like, and this is what it's like being in the working class. And I think in some ways that can lull you a little bit into thinking, oh, these are the, you know, these movies haven't been thought through that deeply. Where with something like Parasite, I think you really, upon multiple watchings, you catch so much more. You know, I, in rewatching it, I did not find a single scene that wasn't contributing something to throwaway scenes happen in movies all the time, and it's fine. Maybe they're just for exposition, but you know, in Parasite, even something as simple as the, you know, they live in this sort of, the poor family live in a semi basement, crowded, dingy apartment in a low lying area of the city. And of course the rich family live in a big mansion, but it's also up on high ground. And there's multiple references at different points in the film to water, like water comes up and is, you know, the first time that the sun arrives at the house, the rich people's house, the sprinklers are on the grass, you know, this lawn has got these sprinklers on, and he notices this. And you know, as soon as I saw that this time, I remembered the scene, you know, maybe 10 minutes earlier where the poor family are all in their house and some drunk guy sort of stumbles into the alley and starts pissing basically on, you know, their house.
Yes.
Like right in front of them. And it's played as this joke, like, oh, the guy's pissing. And, you know, the family sort of, they all have different reactions. And there's the question of like, is someone going to go and do something about, this is our house, don't piss on it and everything else. And at one point the son goes out and confronts him, and the daughter's taking a video and she's laughing. And and there's this reference to a deluge, you know, it's a deluge, like, you know, he's getting deluged in piss. And of course, you know, what ends up happening later in the film, a lot of the film is about the inability of working class people to be in solidarity. They, you know, people, I assume, know the plot. They infiltrate the rich family. They undermine the other working class people that had worked there. They gain access to this house and the jobs and everything else. And then there's this kind of karmic thing that happens where their house gets deluged. There's a huge rainstorm and their entire apartment gets flooded. And, you know, the way that this plays as a kind of, on the one hand, it is this karmic punishment. They've done this thing, and not, I don't think they've done harm to the rich family, but they've done harm to these other working people. And you know it as you're watching it, you feel it. It's like you start out enjoying the caper, and then you gradually start to feel like, oh, wait a second, this is not feeling very good. What about solidarity? Obviously, solidarity is out the window in Act Two of the film, where the Kim family and the other family are just at loggerheads with each other. And then, you know, they get punished for it. And the deluge is the punishment. I wouldn't have necessarily put all those pieces together in terms of the water metaphor and the way it's used.
Sure.
and the way that it reflects specifically, you know, this, like, when you're on low ground, when you're down low, physically, literally, in a basement, you know, underneath a rich person's house, or in a poor neighborhood, or just in low ground in the city, like, the shit flows downhill, the water flows downhill, and if you can't find a way to be in solidarity, you're gonna drown in it, and that's what happens. I mean, I think there's some interesting layers there.
Yeah, certainly. Like, like that's a very good example of something that, like, I would never accuse, I would never accuse this movie of not being well thought out by any
Yeah.
means. It's like I said, it's like a well-cooked meal that just like doesn't have tastes in it that you like or whatever. For the most part, there are things that about it that I would not count as like fair artistic criticisms necessarily. Like, I would not say that the movie would be a better movie if it was more what I wanted by any means, but that I do think are like valid reasons to not enjoy something or to quibble with certain thematic elements. So, like, I guess I'll start by saying that, especially the second time around, this is not always a thing that bothers me in movies. In fact, a lot of the time it's great and it can work really well. But everyone in this movie is such a monumental asshole that I found it eventually, like I said, especially upon rewatch, kind of hard to enjoy because I just was overtaken with contempt for everyone in the movie. So much so that when I watched the host immediately afterwards, and the main actor from both movies, whose name escapes me at the moment, he's also in Snowpiercer. Like
Song Kang-ho, yeah.
that's right. Yes. He appears at the very beginning of the host, like in the second scene, and it's just like a close up of his face, and he's like sleeping or
Sleeping,
whatever. And I was immediately like, oh great, it's this asshole again.
yeah.
Which of course, like, that dissipated immediately because it's a completely
Yeah.
different movie. But like, I found there to be certain things with the way the everyone was characterized that just like bothered me on a sort of like, I guess, I don't know, personal experience level or just I don't want to say aesthetically because it's not quite an aesthetic choice. It's more of a narrative choice. But like, I had one, I guess, basically central issue with the movie that really, really affected my enjoyment. And my that issue is, in addition to the fact that I found basically all of the characters except for the little ADHD kid that just runs around terrorizing everyone, to be either like very annoying or just shitty. But perhaps more importantly, I found the like rich couple to be far and away the like least offensive of all of the characters, except for maybe the original maid, the one whose husband lives in the bunker,
Right.
right?
Yeah.
She was okay. I'll give her a pass. She's not so bad. But like, other than her, I actually found like the rich couple in this movie to not come across that bad, really at all. Like, for a rich couple that like employ a driver and employ a maid, like a live-in maid, and yada yada yada. Like, they don't cross the threshold for me from like rich asshole who's just basically an asshole because they're rich, because of their like standing, into like actively like bad person for reasons that go beyond just like, oh well, they're bosses and they have
Right.
employees or whatever. And that
Yeah.
isn't to say like I'm not missing the point.
Okay.
I understand the point. Like, I understand what the point is. I understand that it's that, like, that it's everyone's economic and social position that allows them to be less shitty or more shitty, or force or coerces them into being more shitty or whatever else. It's just a thing that bothered me personally on a narrative level because, after hearing so much about what a great like class critique this movie has, and I'm not even saying that it doesn't necessarily, it just bothered me on a personal level
Yeah.
to go into the movie and watch it and be like, oh, all of the poor people in this movie are assholes, except for maybe the maid, and the rich couple, like, they're just kind of oblivious. They're just kind of like stupid, and they don't really understand, and they're just sort of they're siphoned off. They're in a bubble or whatever. And you know, I definitely wouldn't say that that's like an incorrect characterization of what a lot of the working poor and a lot of the idle rich are like. It's just that for me personally, if we are meant to take each of these sort of stratum of characters as symbolic of the whole, right? Then I would say that the idea that the problem that the biggest problem with the rich is that, well, you know, yeah, they're a little callous. They think poor people smell bad, and they, you know, are kind of ignorant to their problems. But really, you know, they're mostly just kind of oblivious and stupid, and they don't know any better. And meanwhile, the poor people are all killing and fucking each other over because of their desperation or whatever. Like, if you want to go back to last episode where we did Judas and the Black Messiah, and you were like, did we really need a movie about the snitch? For me, I guess when I watched this movie, I was like, did we really need a movie that characterizes the rich people this way? As
I mean,
opposed to like initially when, and again, this isn't like, this doesn't mean the movie would be better. It's just a thing for me personally. Like initially when the bunker opened up and there's people living in there, I was like, oh yeah. Oh yeah, baby. This rocks. Like they're fucking keeping people in their basement. Like I can't wait to find out what this is. And then immediately, well, I shouldn't say immediately, but by the end of it, like I hated that guy in the basement more than I hated them. Like he's like trying to like send Morse code fucking messages about how much he loves the guy. Like I fucking hated that. Like I under again, I'm not missing the point. I'm not missing the point.
Yeah, no, I
I
know. I know.
understand. I just don't like that guy now because he's
I
like
mean,
that.
here's the thing. Like, you're right that, like, I'll say this. This attempt, this particular type of portrayal of class and class struggle, it's a tough watch in that it's not the movie that we reviewed a few weeks ago, the horror movie
Yeah, it's definitely
where
not.
the rich, right? It's the opposite of that in a sense, where in that movie the rich people are psychotic. They're psychotic villains, and it's cathartic to just hate them and cheer for the working class girl stuck in this scene. And this doesn't give us that catharsis. This like actively ruins the catharsis by teasing it early on. I mean, I think early in like Act One, I found certainly that I'm cheering for the Kim family to infiltrate, you know, and take advantage of these dumb rich people. I'm cheering for them.
Sure.
And then, of course, by the end of Act One and into Act Two, you're not anymore. You can't, because yeah, they've revealed themselves, you know, to be selfish, you know, and not even ignorant, but actively selfish. There's the scene, obviously, with the four of them, you know, important scene when they're all getting drunk in the house. And you know, that's the scene where they explicitly talk about, you know, rich people are rich or nice because they can be because they're rich. But they also in that scene, you know, the dad starts to express remorse about having screwed over the other chauffeur and the other housekeeper. And the daughter is sort of like, no, don't think that way. We have to look out for ourselves. So, you know, by that point, yeah, like you're being given a portrayal of the working class that is not a celebration in any kind of obvious and cartoonish way. But I also think, like, at some level, it is an honest portrayal of what most people go through. Even, you know, look, let me put it this way. I haven't had to, you know, fake my way into, you know, a rich person's house to act as a chauffeur, but I
Nope.
have had to compete with my friends for jobs. You know, and I'm by no means in the worst stratum of, you know, the working class. And yet, as an academic, I have spent my whole adult life, at least until I got a job, competing with my peers and friends to get work, to get this class at this college, to get this job at this place. Like,
sure,
you know, there's, you know, hundreds of applicants for this position in political science, and I know half of them, and I've got to distinguish myself from them. I mean, even, you know, the other day I was talking to a friend of mine who is a contract faculty, and contract faculty members across Canada are always pitted against each other in these extremely personal ways. You know, for every class they teach, you know, you want to teach a section of sociology 101. Well, you got to compete with, you know, the guy you bowl with on Thursdays. Like, it's just, it's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and again, this is in a relatively, you know, high stratum of the working class compared to some. So
yeah, totally.
I really like that there's this effort to portray, you know, the ways in which solidarity is obstructed. We all want to do solidarity. I want to watch Matawan and watch, you know, the workers on strike join with the scabbing workers and both go on strike together and fight the bosses with guns. It feels great.
Of course, yeah.
But I also, at times, like, I also need to acknowledge that ain't happening. And there's structural reasons why that's difficult. And I think that's what the film is giving us. It's this kind of structural portrayal of how hard it is to do solidarity. So, well, and I'm sympathetic to your position, right? It is hard to watch. Yeah.
That is a thing that as we branch out and talk about some of his other movies, that is a recurring theme, like the lack of solidarity and the structural impediments that that create that lack of solidarity among the working class, and also to a lesser extent, like the middle and upper middle classes as well.
Which actually maybe is a good place to just sort of inject, you know, a 2-minute sort of comment on Bong Joon-ho himself and
sure.
his context. Yes. And this might lead us into talking about the host a little bit, perhaps.
Sure.
But, you know, Bong Joon-ho comes out of a context where South Korea, you know, is basically a U.S. military dictatorship, a puppet dictatorship mm-hmm. after the Second World War. You know, the U.S. moves in to Korea after Japan is defeated and basically, you know, attempts to occupy it. They fail to completely occupy the North, which is why North Korea still exists. But obviously they pulverize it and maintain their control. The U.S. actually installs the dictatorship that runs South Korea for the first decade or so mm-hmm. of its existence, and then maintains basically military dictatorships well into the 1980s. So Bong Joon-ho grows up in, you know, under these military dictatorships and comes of age, you know, in the 80s. He's born in 1969, so he's, you know, sort of coming of age in the 80s and becomes part of the student aspect of the democracy movement of the 80s and into the 90s. Which is, you know, this kind of series of protests, you know, strikes, political actions to try to, you know, achieve some degree of democracy in South Korea. All under the shadow of the U.S., the massive, mm-hmm. overwhelming power that the U.S. has in South Korea. And so, you know, a lot of, I think, what Bong Joon-ho ends up critiquing about capitalism is sort of framed by this South Korean, you know, post-1980s South Korea, where some degree of democracy has been established, and he's part of that movement that establishes it. And yet, inequality is still horrendous. Injustice and just the sense of an utterly decrepit, corrupt political and judicial system. I mean, you know, it's runs through a lot of Korean cinema, just this sense of the deeply corrupt bureaucracy, the deeply corrupt system. And that's like his context, and that's what he's often, you know, writing about. And I mean, this comes up most in The Host, right? Because sure. it's the one of the four that is the most kind of seems to engage the most with politics in South Korea specifically. And you see, obviously, in The Host, it's like the Americans create the monster. They literally yes. create the monster by dumping formaldehyde into the river.
I loved that. That it just began. And it was very striking as, like, for an American audience, it was very striking because the vast majority of the movie is in Korean. But the very first lines of the movie are spoken by the American scientist. And it's basically just him being like, just pour it down the drain. What are you so worried about? That's what they're telling us to do. Just don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Just pour the mutant creating chemicals directly into the water supply. It'll be fine. What bad thing could possibly happen? And it's just that combination of like malicious and also dismissive.
Yeah.
Where it's like, well, nothing will happen, but even if it does, even if something did happen, who cares? And it wouldn't, it's not our fault. Basically, that kind of attitude. Then this like the host really was, out of all of them, the one that I enjoyed the most, I think, because I found it to be, other than Parasite, which is just such a so much its own thing, and my lack of enjoyment of it is so subjective, not based on what I consider to be actual reasonable critiques of things like aesthetics and storytelling and writing and yada yada yada. The host was the one that I enjoyed the most because I found it to be like the most even. I went in, I was hooked from the beginning, and I was mostly pretty thoroughly engaged throughout. And my only real criticism would be it's perhaps slightly overstuffed. There are perhaps like, it may have been a better movie if it had chosen to focus more on one aspect of the story, because there are a lot of different things going on. It's kind of about like three or four different things happening simultaneously. One thing that I will say is that with so much of the movie being based around a virus and then the virus turning out to be fake.
I know.
Well, okay. First of all, thing number one, that has aged poorly, unfortunately.
Yeah.
The movie comes across as far more like reactionary as a result, but it's also 15 years old. So it's hard to hold it too accountable for that. But then the second thing is also like, well, okay, if this virus plays such a huge role in the plot, and then it turns out to just be fake, and it turns out to just be a distraction from how the monster was actually created, there is an element of that that kind of made me go like, well, what did we need this for then? Maybe we could have just done without that actually, and made it more of just like a kaiju movie or whatever, simplified it. You could have, I think, kept most of the same criticisms in it without that. But again, that's a fairly piddling criticism. Ultimately, like it didn't hugely affect my enjoyment of it. It's not like I was like rolling my eyes or getting bored or anything. I just definitely like I didn't love any of these movies, and I didn't love The Host. But the Host felt like maybe the one that was the closest to me loving it if he had just tightened it up a little bit. But
well, it certainly has the most like obvious villains. I mean, Okja also has pretty obvious villains, I suppose. But I mean, I think the host isn't as hard on its heroes as the others tend to be. Again, Okja is a little different because obviously the girl in Okja is, you know, is a sympathetic character, but she's really the only one. But see, this is what I like. I think this is what I go to Bong Joon-ho for. I go to him for the sense for it's like, I know this film is going to be, you know, in a sort almost slapstick way, critical of capitalism. I know it's going to be a send up of different forms of different aspects of capitalism that I hate. You know, The Host is a send up of U.S. militarism and imperialism, as well as like, you know, mocking the South Korean, you know, bureaucracy and for, you know, for its corruption and so on. You know, Okja is, I think, a pretty stirring at times critique of the meat industry. Like, I mean, by the end of it,
talk about Okja. We'll maybe go to that one.
Yeah, we'll
next.
Get there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, and, you know, Parasite obviously is more specific to the way that class operates, but there's always these slapstick elements of the criticism. But I mean, what I look to in these films is the more subtle questions of how do working class people try to form bonds of solidarity to stand up to these things, and how do they fail? Which, which the host has also. You know, there's several ways in which, you know, what you want, which is that all of the poor people come together and realize the problem and save the day, never happens. It always fails. The family at the heart of this thing is dysfunctional and hate one another in a lot of ways and can't get past it and never really mm-hmm. get past it. You know, there's flickers at times of solidarity between the girl who gets eaten by the monster and the homeless yes. boy who gets captured, right? You see a little of it. There's always these kind of teases of it. But there's always this sense, and I think this will apply to all of these films. There's yes. And maybe Parasite the least, but there's always this sense that, like, you could see how solidarity could have happened. You could see where it might have happened, where working people might have, you know, it's like you want to pause the movie and say, hold on a minute, just you talk to him and say, we're all in this together. We got to, the real enemy is like, you want to intervene in that way, and yet you can't. The film just keeps going and our working class people keep, you know,
and
ripping
see, okay,
each other
you've
apart.
You've touched on something that for me, is part of the reason why I enjoyed The Host more, and Okja, actually, when we talk about that, like, more than Parasite. And that is there is a difference between people not being able to have solidarity and there being impediments or obstacles to that, and people being actively shitty and malicious to one another. And I think the thing about Okja and about The Host in particular that is very different, very distinct from Parasite in turn, and made me enjoy them more in terms of just, you know, ability to connect with the characters or whatever, is that, like, these characters, the working class characters, they may not have solidarity with one another, but they behave in a way that I metabolize as, like, the way a decent person would behave in that situation. And obviously there's varying degrees of that or whatever. Whereas in Parasite, it sort of portrays the working class as being always actively participating in trying to undercut each other and trying to screw each other over and very brutally compete with one another to the point where they, like, enact violence on one another. The Host and Okja, that idea that they're being impeded from showing solidarity with one another is more obvious to me. It's more clear, and it seems less, significantly less, like a defect of their own personal character. And this is going to get into, I think we can talk a little bit about Okja is really the kind of most, like, left field of the movies for me in mm-hmm. terms of my enjoyment and dislike, what I dislike about it, because it's mm-hmm. it's centered very specifically around one thing.
Yeah, and I, you know, I want to come back to, like, okay, hey, no, I'm going to do it now, and then okay. let's jump to Okja. But sure. Like, there is something I want to say about what you just said. Like, I agree with a lot of that, and yeah. I think Parasite for sure is the one that gives us the least. It gives us the least sympathetic heroes.
Yes.
You know, if we consider the Kim family, the four of them, to be the heroes of the film, they are the least sympathetic of any of his like protagonists. But I would quibble, and maybe this is like multiple watchings and also, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. you know, being sympathetic to the film and being sympathetic to the director, but I would quibble and say that they are, like, they're shitty in mostly minor ways. And sure. What happens is that their relatively small acts of, like, villainy get them caught into situations where now, in order to protect themselves, they have to do things that are much shittier. So, you know, the one of the hardest scenes to get through, of course, is when the family discover the you know, that there's the guy living in the basement, the other working class couple, and now they're in this situation, they're in this bind. And, you know, the former housekeeper is begging and saying, like, please just, like, give my husband some food. He needs to stay down here. And the new mm-hmm. housekeeper has this moment where, like, this could be a moment of solidarity. But she's also contemplating the consequences of what happens if they get caught. And and sort of in that fateful moment, right, the rest of the Kim family fall down the stairs. They get seen. The whole thing blows up. Now, all of a sudden, these other two working class people know that the Kim family are frauds, and there's the possibility of their getting exposed. Like, suddenly and very quickly, they are at each other's throats in ways that are still, I would argue, fundamentally about their precarity in their class position. I mean, the reason that the Kim family have to,
No, I just, I because it's funny you say that, because I actually think once we reach that point, once we reach sort of the second half of the movie, I find it much easier to empathize or sympathize with everyone in the movie from that point on than I do with how they got in the position in the first place.
Okay.
Like to me, the understanding of like because people, when they're backed into a situation where they can only react, they're bound to do worse things, bound to behave more instinctually. Like, if you've ever seen, I suppose it's been a while since I've seen the movie, but the TV series Fargo, and probably the movie as well to some extent. If you've ever seen the TV series Fargo, like, I've seen the first three seasons, and there's a relatively like common theme to each of the seasons where a person does a bad thing, but the bad thing that they do initially is maybe not, it's understandable, or it's or it's an accident, or it's a mistake, it's an honest mistake, or it's they panicked and they did something they shouldn't have done, and then what they should do is just come clean.
What they should
do is just cut their losses and be like, I hit this guy with my car. If I just come clean, I just plead down, if I just say it was an accident, like I may not even get jail time. Like I might even be able to say, like, this guy ran out in front of my car, I hit him. Oh my God. Like, I'm so sorry. You know?
Yeah. Which side note, is like, as a professor that catches students plagiarizing.
Yes.
Like, this is a lesson. Yeah. They need to learn the lesson of Fargo, right?
Yeah, totally.
Like, just own it at the start. Just tell me what happened and we will deal with it. You'll lose 5 marks or something. But the ones that double down and it just gets worse. And now I'm in a position, I got to submit this thing to the dean. Like, it just gets bigger. So,
And so that element of it, like where they basically get to a point where they're like, where they're like, okay, well, now what the fuck do we do? Like, am I going to have to kill this guy? Like, all of that kind of makes sense, because it's like, well, you're in it now, you know? And that's why I love, the Fargo TV series. And part of the reason it works so well for me is because I'm sympathetic. I think we've all, you know, not to that extent, but been in a situation where you fucked up and then now you're too deep. And you feel like you can't just own up to it. And so you have to keep like, it's the snowball effect or whatever, right? The people in all of this that I actually feel the worst for are the people that are in the movie the least and have the least like, characterization. Like, the guy I think I most feel bad for in this movie is the original limo driver. Or the original driver, what I guess it's not a limo, but like to me, the shittiest thing that someone does in this movie, personally, to me, is frame that guy and get him fired under false pretenses so that they can take his job.
Right.
Because, and the reason why it's the shit, because you could say, like, well, there's a guy who tries to kill another guy. Isn't that worse? And it's like, yes, ultimately, yes. But the thing is that that's not. It's a thing we use in our like legal system all the time. It's not premeditated. It's not malicious necessarily. Or up to a certain point it is, because he's like, okay, well, I'm going to take the rock and I'm going to go downstairs or whatever. So I guess it is premeditated. Yeah, yeah. But like the careful planning of, we are going to get all of these innocent people fired and then take all of their jobs. To me,
two of them, only two.
It's two.
But see, I'm with you. I get that. I think you're right. But I do think it's significant that, like, I think that's all very intentional. And maybe,
yeah,
you
Oh,
know,
I'm
that's,
not
and maybe
arguing that
that's,
it's not intentional. I'm just, it's just, it's just a thing. Like I said, a thing for me personally that made it very hard to give a shit about any of these people. And that's a, that is essentially like the extent to which you can enjoy, the tension in a movie of, are they going to get caught? What's going to happen is, you either have to be rooting for a certain outcome, or like, you invested in the characters in some kind of way that you're like, I really, I guess this is basically the same thing, but you're just like, oh, I really hope they're okay. Or I really hope that they get what's coming to them. And in this movie, I just felt so ambivalent about everyone in it that I couldn't give a shit what happened to any of them. So
it's funny, like, you know, I'm honestly surprised, and because I would have thought, and I hear you actually, like, I think that's totally fair. And I also like, and I hear that it's a subjective thing at a certain level.
Yes.
And I mean, and I've had movies like that where I just, or shows where like, yeah, the point is that everyone's shitty, but I don't want to watch something about a bunch of shitty people. And I just subjectively am not interested in that.
Yeah, and
I've
sometimes
had that experience.
It works. Sometimes it works. Like there are definitely, well, I mean, I just mentioned Fargo. Like there are definitely seasons of Fargo where basically everyone is shitty and I'm enthralled. So it's not, it's a very specific combo of like, it's, you know, to compare it to food again, it's like, I like salt. I like savory. I like sweet. I like umami. But this particular combo of all of these flavors is creating a hole that isn't hitting me in the right way for whatever reason.
Let me ask you this. How much joy did you take in the early stages of the con? So the early stages of Act One, when the son gets into the house on not even that false of a pretense and actually does like just go and teach English, then they get the sister in on the more false sort of art teacher thing, but no one got fired there. They just, you know, basically parted these rich people from a bit of their money and took advantage of their naivety. Like, did you enjoy those bits? Because the reason I ask is because for me, I'm with you. Like the getting the chauffeur fired and getting the housekeeper fired, like they both felt uncomfortable. They both had this sense of like, oh geez, this is starting to make me feel bad. But I was bringing into it like such joy and glee from the initial stages of, yeah, that's right. This poor family who have a lot of care and love for one another and a deep bond for each other.
Yes,
and some
certainly.
Of the, for me, the scenes like, you know, where they eat together and the dad brings everyone together to eat. And like, there's something really quite loving between the four of them, even despite their conflicts. And I was really invested, and it doesn't take long. It's only about 20 minutes, half an hour of that.
So
but I'm really invested.
I will say like initially, It is funny, and I did think it was funny, and certainly the first time, like there's always that general curiosity that is not enough to sustain a movie or to sustain the quality of a movie upon multiple rewatches or whatever. But there was initially that curiosity of like, oh okay, like what's going on? What are they doing? Like oh, this is kind of funny. Like they're bullshitting them into thinking that. That they're an art teacher or whatever and yada, yada, yada. And, but even like right off the hop, I had this, and this is kind of a thing that's going to be a factor in all of the movies that we talk about here, except for maybe The Host, that I struggle with is that as I was watching that, I was like, well, whoa, wait, hold on here. Is this movie going to be about how the poor people are preying on this rich family? And then that is kind of what it was. Like,
right.
And there's this element to Bong Joon-ho that is like, if we get into Death of the Author stuff here, I don't want to blame any one too thoroughly for their work being embraced by the wrong people or misunderstood or whatever, because like I really like Fight Club and The Matrix, and those are two movies that have been hugely misunderstood and embraced by some of the worst people on Earth, right? But like Elon Musk really liked Parasite. He was vocal about that. And the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, or whatever the fuck they're called, really liked this movie, Parasite. And, you know, we talked about how the ending of Ready or Not, like, let the rich people off the hook or whatever. It, again, like, this isn't fair, and I'm not applying it equally everywhere, because there's plenty of examples of movies where I go, no, people misunderstand that movie, they're stupid, whatever, that's their problem. But I think it's sometimes it's like that's easier to do with the passage of time. And because this movie is so recent, and I also have this issue with the Florida Project, which is another movie I would like to discuss at some point, either the movie itself or the director, where I just have this fucking, just there's something inside me when I watch it that eats at me, that thinks the wrong people like this. Or the wrong people could very easily take the wrong thing from this. And I don't have, while watching the movie, I don't have the confidence, based on the clues that the movie is providing, that the director doesn't, or the writer in this case, both, that's unintentional. That's just a total misreading. Like, and in the case of Parasite, I've said this before elsewhere, but like I just could not shake the feeling that like Elon Musk and like the Academy Award people and all these other fucking people like watch this movie and were just like, yeah, poor people do be like that. And I don't think that there's anything in the movie that you could point to and say like, well, no, that's not what he meant, you know, even if I don't think that's what he meant, because I don't.
Yeah.
But it's a,
if, I don't know. You know, it's just, I don't know. I don't think so. Like, I mean, I hear you. And I had this, I remember I said the same thing about Judas and the Black Messiah. I think almost like word for word, that is what I said. I was like, I know that the director did not mean, you know, to make snitching, you know, to valorize snitching.
Sure.
But there are totally going to be people that watch this and think, yeah, you know what? Sometimes you got to snitch. I hear that criticism for sure. I think on this one, it's, I disagree with you. And I think that to do that is, you have to be in pretty bad faith or pretty stupid, because I don't think at any point we're meant to sympathize with the rich family. Not really. I mean, the kids maybe, but
it's funny.
It's
funny that you say that, because like I don't sympathize with them, right? Obviously, I don't.
Yeah.
But like, I also just in the strata of society that they are portraying. Like, if you were gonna rank the characters in this movie in level of shittiness and level of detestability, like they would rank near the bottom.
Right. And, for sure. And, but I thought that was like very, I felt that was really explicitly, you know, like he literally puts it in a character's mouth that they can be nice because they have all of this privilege.
Yes.
And
yeah, absolutely.
Right. So, I mean, so, and I don't necessarily disagree with you that has an impact on the subjective enjoyment of it. Yeah, you spend 2 hours watching some poor people be shitty and some rich people be basically nice and just naive. And maybe at the end of all of that, it's not really very satisfying.
Yeah.
But I don't think you can say in any way Bong Joon-ho intends. I think it's very obvious that the title Parasite is meant to be a reversal. It's meant to be, superficial thing is that they are the poor people parasitic off the rich. But in fact, you know, the parasite is the system. The rich people are a parasite on the system. And that if poor people are being parasitic, it's because they have so few other choices. Like, I think that to me is
I don't necessarily disagree with you. Like, I'm not arguing that like, oh, this movie is just so subtle that people will miss the point.
Right. Yeah.
I'm more just making the same argument that I made about the end of Ready or Not, which is that I think this movie basically lets the rich couple completely off the hook.
Yeah.
And that's the issue that I take more so than anything else. And I think, I think it's just a little too easy for someone like Elon Musk to watch the movie and think like either one, like poor people do be like that, or two, like yes, not me though. You know what I mean? And it's not, again, like these are fairly subjective criticisms. Like, does the fact that like Elon Musk like a movie make it worse? Like, I mean, no, it has nothing to do with the movie. But to apply that elsewhere, I used to really like the cartoon Rick and Morty, and Elon Musk enjoying that thing also ruined it for me. So it's not like I'm being totally inconsistent here. Like,
No, for sure.
and when we talk about the theme of letting rich people off the hook and portraying poor, like the working class in a very negative light or very psychotically or whatever, I think I wanted to talk about Okja, but I want to very quickly switch lanes and talk a little bit about Snowpiercer, because what I'm going to say about my enjoyment of Snowpiercer and my enjoyment of Okja are kind of similar. So we can move very quickly, and I won't spend too much time on it because this was the one that neither of us rewatched. So what I'll say about Snowpiercer is, out of all of these movies, this was the one that, heading up to a certain point in the movie, I was enjoying the most, and I was the most prepared to be like, this rocks, this is a fun movie, I like everything about this. I thought visually it was really, really good. Like, it looks the best of his movies, in my opinion, at least in terms of like, I mean, Parasite is such a different thing. It's not a big budget action sci-fi fantasy or whatever kind of thing. It's a very much like a drama thriller, you know, yada yada yada. But like, all the action sequences in it are really good. The different like carts of the train all pop in different ways and are very evocative. I liked the class critique of it quite a lot. Like I was like, oh yeah, this is totally obvious, but who cares? It's cool. It's like, yeah, you have the poor people at the back of the train and they live like shit. And then as you get further up the train, the people are living better and better. Yeah, totally obvious. You're not gonna, you know, you're not gonna win any points for subtlety. It's very The Rat at the end of The Departed. Like, I know what you're saying here. Thanks for driving it home. But like, it was fun. And it's also like the most I've really liked Chris Evans in a role, I think, too. I thought he was very, very good. Like, very, very. That's a very, very good role for him. Like a sort of naive, a little naive, not the smartest guy, but just kind of good natured and kind of good hearted and hardworking. Like, that's very believable for me from him, which is why I liked him better as a you know, I can't even remember the guy's name, but the Johnny Torch or whatever in Fantastic Four, than I do as, or even the guy in like Cellular or whatever, the guy where he helps the lady on the phone or whatever, versus like Captain America, where it just feels totally like he's just a completely, you know, ubermensch, like impossible to relate to, yada yada yada. Like, I actually think you can use Chris Evans well, and it's just that, you know, he's so good looking and like such an obvious like star quality to him that he ends up being just like very boring. But he doesn't have to be, and Snowpiercer is a good example
Yeah, it
of that.
is. So where did it turn? Where did it turn in Snowpiercer?
It turned for me very immediately to the point where I could not get back into it at the point of the twist, which is that, and I really, really genuinely detested this, that his like heroic father figure that is like his inspiration for taking up arms and trying to sort of like, you know, I lead a revolution is maybe putting a little bit too fine a point on it, but to try and seize control of the train for the benefit of the people at the back of it, the revelation that that character played by John Hurt, I believe, is in cahoots with the guy at the front of the train, and that they're engaging in like a population control scheme, basically, and that like he's in the back so that he can kind of pull the strings from back there, and then that was made worse by just the ending of the movie, which I just hated, because it's just like, oh, and then the train crashes and everyone dies. Cool, awesome, great. Who like that just that's just such a disappointing ending to a movie like that. Like that is
I mean, it really No,
No,
finish
I
your
was just
thought.
gonna
Finish
say
your thought.
that is an example of a movie that to me was like you tripped over your own dick. Like this movie was to use a very obvious metaphor here. It was on a track, it was headed to its destination, and then you pulled the lever and fucking crashed it into like a big fucking wall or whatever. Like that was just a movie that like nothing bothers me more than when someone tries to get clever or tries to get cute or artsy with their like big budget action movie and it makes it worse. Like that's the
See,
worst thing you can do, in my opinion, is like.
See, okay. I think what I'm starting to identify a theme here, right?
Yes, there is.
There is, and I'm sympathetic to it. Like I get where your frustration comes from with this, and I share it to some extent, but I, for whatever reason, I give him room to do this. I think that people don't realize how cynical Bong Joon-ho is.
Oh, he's
And I
incredibly
don't think
cynical.
that he's I mean, he is, and it's hidden, it's obscured by the fact that these movies are always over the top, overblown anti-capitalist movies, and they seem so obvious, and it
And
seems so
often very funny.
ham-fisted, often very funny, very sincere, and quite trenchant in their critiques. Like he's not wrong. Like the train, like you say, the train thing is obvious, but it works.
Totally.
You know, a lot of the stuff in Parasite is obvious, but it works. But what people don't expect, and I think, you know, in some cases, like reject, and I think what you're rejecting is that underneath this, underneath his anti-capitalism, there is some real cynicism
Yes.
about anti-capitalist movements and struggles. And you know, this is the kind of thing that in another context could really piss me off too. And I get really frustrated with this kind of thing sometimes, and I can find it really liberal, and it can really, really bother me. For some reason, I give him some sway, and I think it's because he usually portrays, like, his cynicism is always that, like, the struggle, you know, the working class isn't going to be this perfect working class. They're not going to be these great heroes you expect them to be. And the struggle is going to be co-opted, and the revolution isn't going to be what you think. And these protesting heroes are going to turn out to be, like, in The Host, the guy who had been that great student leader, you know, in the 80s. And then in the movie, The Host ends up basically selling out his former friend to the authorities.
Yeah,
You
totally.
know, and that is, especially it comes through there. That is Bong Joon-ho's, I think it's a pretty foundational piece of his, like, personal ideology, is that he lived through, at a formative time in his life, in his, like, early 20s, this radical movement against a decrepit capitalist dictatorship, and
Yes.
lived through the hope of building that and being part of it, and then seeing it degenerate into more of the same shit. Mobilizing, you know, radical language, but to essentially perpetuate the same system under slightly different terms. And so that cynicism runs through these films. And okay,
Yes.
I'm with you. In Snowpiercer, it's the worst. I find that the
Okay.
worst
And
version of it.
this is where I wanna where I just wanna like finish my thought here because because this is a definitely the biggest theme of my like criticism of these movies, not even necessarily criticism, but just like the reason why I didn't enjoy them either that much at all or as much as I could have. But in Snowpiercer, the reason it bothers me the most is because okay, so in The Host, the betrayal, very easy to understand the motivations, and we also don't necessarily like know a ton about the guy. He kind of just comes in as a figure that you think is going to help them, and then he turns on them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's not hard to understand, because it's just like, well, there's a ton of money involved.
Yeah.
There's a big reward. Okay, well, that makes sense. Like, yeah, people get older, their priorities change, they get more desperate, more locked in, and they want to take the money so that they can have the money. That's totally understandable. That's fine. Parasite, even, like, I may not have liked the characters, but I understood their motivations, and it's obvious what their motivations are. Like, their house fucking sucks. They don't have any money. Yeah. They don't have any jobs. Like, it's understandable, and I totally understand why some people, that would be enough to just be like, well, I'm not really going to hold it against them that they get these people fired or whatever, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. That's fine. John Hurt in Snowpiercer, for him to do what he does in that movie would have to be genuinely psychotic and not even motivated by self-interest.
Agreed.
What does he get out of that?
Yeah,
he cut off his own arm so that someone could eat it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just stupid. Like, it's just a pure, like, pull the rug out from under you thing. And that is why of all of these movies, Snowpiercer was like the most disappointing, because I was really enjoying it on the level that it was on. And then it just got cute and it got too clever by half. And it felt very half baked in a way like that is a degree of magnitude worse than any of the other movies that we've discussed
here. And politically, like, you know, it didn't need to, it could easily have been done differently in a way that would, like.
Well, even giving him a chance to explain his own motivations would have made a difference. You just find out after he's dead, you know, like.
Yeah. Or even having him have been coerced in some way, you know, like, you know, there's the capo, you know, is an important trope.
Absolutely.
Right. The capo, you know, the person who is a prisoner but gets deputized to you know, be in charge of the other prisoners.
Yes.
You know, that's a well-used trope. It's, you know, Pontecorvo did it. It was in the TV show Andor recently, very effectively done there.
I'm excited to watch that. I haven't watched it yet.
Oh, yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, I've heard it's
almost
good.
Something to talk about.
Yeah.
But like, they don't do that in Snowpiercer. And so instead, what you're left with, and this is my biggest problem with it, what you're left with is the idea that don't bother having a revolution because humans are shitty and someone will sell it out and it'll all come apart.
That's the thing that I don't like about all of this stuff.
Exactly.
Is that there's two things that shine through for me so much that I can't feel like I can say like, oh, well, he didn't mean for that to be the message, because if I'm getting it and I'm absorbing it as a person who should be like the most sympathetic to him, then I struggle to think that it's not intentional. And it's two things. It's the first is, it's the idea that, well, the reason why the working class hasn't, you know, done a revolution or even just more so like the reason why the status of the working class is so poor is because of their own personal defects. Like, if they would just stop getting in their own way, if they weren't so shitty to each other, then maybe we could have something, you know. That's an element of it, but more like specifically, the main thing is that pessimism of just like, well, what's even the point of trying, because someone will just fuck it up. And that is like, that is such a overrepresented idea in media stories, yada yada yada, about like political engagement and political revolution, is like this idea of like, well, we better just sit here and be patient and wait to see what we can get and then try to really change things, because, you know, some psychotic guy who would give up his own arm to keep the established order in check, despite the fact that he gets nothing out of it, it will just fuck it up for you.
Right.
And then we'll all die when the train crashes.
Right.
But, I don't know. It really bothered me.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. I think there's a slight, I'm with you to a point, and then I break off from where you are, because I mean, I think he is deeply cynical and deeply pessimistic, and definitely at times makes for a hard watch. I don't think, like, even despite the what I think is an error in the way that John Hurt's character is presented in Snowpiercer, mm-hmm. I don't actually think that Bong Joon-ho is a liberal who's trying to say
either.
That, you know, yeah, like, revolution can't happen because the working class is shitty. I think that he is, you know, much more critical and smart than that. And I think his overall thing is basically to say there are so many, we should all be anti-capitalists, mm-hmm. but there are so many ways in which we are being structured out of doing the things that need to be done. And Snowpiercer is the one case where I think the end, blowing up the train, mm-hmm. is actually meant to represent doing what needs to be done. Mm-hmm. I just think that the ineffective creation of that character around John Hurt mm-hmm. made the end fail. Like, it made it fall apart. It made it not make sense the way it was meant to. I mean, I think what he's going for is, you know, look, do a revolution and don't be surprised when some things go sideways that you didn't expect. Don't be surprised if someone who you think is an ally to your struggle, you know, just like we thought there were allies to our struggle in the late 80s, and it turned out they weren't. Don't be surprised when that happens. You still have to blow the system apart. That's the only way you can fix it, is to destroy the entire system. I mean, I think Snowpiercer is his attempt to be the most radical.
Yes.
But also in the failure to get that character right, like, it lands very poorly. Whereas Parasite, I think, is his most cynical. It's his most pessimistic, because there's really nothing. There's no catharsis at the end. It all falls apart. And, you know, I mean, I still like it because I still think it's a bleak but real portrayal of where we are. It's capitalist realism. It's
yes,
you know, we are being pitted against each other, and it is very difficult to see the way out of it. But it's the most pessimistic because there really is nothing. Whereas Okja, maybe this is where we can switch to Okja.
Yes.
Okja is a bleak ending, but it's not a completely hopeless ending. Like, there is this sense of, you get the feeling at the end that, you know, this single-minded struggle to save Okja, you know, maybe didn't change much about how the system operates, but it revealed what the system is and showed us what needs to be done.
So Okja is very interesting for me because, so this is what I mean by having complicated feelings about these movies, right? So for me, Parasite is a movie that is undeniably, I think, well made, that I have maybe the least, like, artistic or narrative criticisms about, that I just didn't enjoy. It just was not an enjoyable movie watching experience for me. Snowpiercer was an enjoyable movie watching experience for me. I was so on board. I was so loving it for about 70% of the movie, and then it just completely fell apart. To the point where I was like kind of despondent by the end of it at how much it had tripped over its own dick. The Host is just the least flawed of his sort of more his blockbuster sort of ambitious sci-fi action kind of movies, but it's also the least interesting for me. It's like a movie that scores very high because I don't have very many negative things to say about
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
Okja is a movie that I didn't enjoy quite as much as Snowpiercer. It my attention, my engagement with it waned a little bit more than it did with Snowpiercer, but that I really, really did enjoy and really did think was good. And that just had one element right at the very end that I hated so goddamn much that it knocked down my perception of the movie by like a full star.
Oh, wow. Tell us what that was.
It's the fucking gold pig thing. Okay. I thought it was so fucking stupid. I was just like, it just felt like we wrote ourselves into a corner and now we need a way out. And that's the way out. And I realize that that's maybe slightly unfair because they do at least introduce the gold pig at the beginning of the movie, and it's like a Chekhov's gun or whatever. But I just found it to be really, like, after all this, this lady is just going to be like, oh yeah, I'll give you my property in exchange for this this gold pig that I'm gonna have to like melt down and like try to sell on the, like, it just didn't make any fucking sense to me. Like it was just
Sure.
like, if that really happened with all of these characters and everything that took place, like, I'm not saying this would have made a better or more enjoyable movie. It would have been really depressing, but like the realistic thing that happens in that scenario is the lady goes, fuck you, shut the fuck up, and just is like, bye, enjoy your dead pet, bye. Like it was so like, just, this is not an ending. Like, this is just, this is such, it was the kind of thing that like I out of all the movies, it's the one that I criticize the most on like a grade 12 like creative writing level of just being like, and this is kind of my thing with Bong Joon-ho, is that it's not necessarily that I think that he's a failure as a propagandist. He's certainly not a failure as a director. He's a wonderful director. But I think the worst thing about all of this is that all of these like inconsistencies, all of these things that I can point to as like, what's really the message that we're supposed to be getting here? It all kind of circles back to failing as a writer at just things like narrative focus and thematic focus. And I mean, I don't want to sit here and be like, Bong Joon-ho is a failure as a writer. Like that's very harsh. Like all of these movies kind of sit very comfortably for me in like the 3.5 out of 5 range, which isn't even bad. Like it's just that on with all of these movies, they have on some level something in the writing that just like either completely takes me out of it or pisses me off or just like feels chintzy in some way. And with Okja,
See,
it was the for me, it was the most like, come on, that is just a cheat. Like there are 1,000 different ways you could have ended this that would have been like more earned and felt more real based on the movie you just made. It's the most out of place of anything in any of his movies, like in my opinion, in
I
terms of just
didn't,
being
I gotta
like,
say
ugh.
it. It didn't bother me.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think I
I
know what you're
take
gonna
your
say.
point.
I think I know what
Yeah,
you're
like
gonna
I
say.
take your,
Yeah.
yeah, I mean, well, it's because I think it's obvious in the way
Yeah.
that Bong Joon-ho often is.
Yes.
Like, I think he's making an obvious point, which is like, you can't save this pig. You can only purchase it.
Yes.
The only way you can get your pet out of this is if you can give me enough material wealth
Yes.
that makes it worth my while. And we're also under the understanding at that point that the more cold and calculating version of Tilda Swinton has taken over. The previous version of Tilda Swinton, who was cared about the company's image, was going to use the pig, for the company's image. This is the one who is just like, all I care about is the money. I care about
Yes.
selling the meat.
Yes.
So, by that logic, I mean, notwithstanding the need to melt the pig into whatever, into a gold bullion or whatever,
Yeah.
notwithstanding that small point, I still think it serves his purpose, which is to say that you
Yep.
can save your one pig. And
Yes. It is
the
not a
only way you can do
failure of
that.
propaganda by any means. It is, it was crystal clear. Like I understood it
No,
immediately what the point was. It was specifically the vessel that they chose for doing that just felt just too stupid to me. Of just being of it just being like specifically just the it being that gold pig, it just, I don't even know what it was. It was just while I was watching it, I just was like, come, I literally said out loud, come on, come the
I
fuck
think by
on.
by
Because
that point in the film, I've already accepted several over the top aspects of the story, right?
sure.
Like, I've already accepted the zany animal liberation front, who are caricatures of bad
See,
activists, right? Like, which.
that, no, it's funny that you say that because I actually don't think that at all. That was one of my favorite things about the movie, actually, was that it portrayed the Animal Liberation Front people as actual human beings with actual positive and negative qualities and like real principles. And I've never seen that in a movie before. Like, animal rights activists are almost universally portrayed negatively in everything. And when you talk about, we talk about like solidarity and impediments to solidarity and, you know, characters like being shitty to each other or whatever, like, I found all of the Animal Liberation Front stuff to be very like fair in that the conflicts that they have with one another are totally understandable. Like, the guy lies, but he lies for a noble reason.
Right.
And then the other guy is like, you know, Paul Dano, who I love, one of my favorite actors. Like, he like beats the shit out of him. but it's because it's on principle. Like, they were both acting on principle.
Yeah. We commented that with the I want to know what the organizing logic leadership structure is of this organization that Paul Dano can just like beat the shit out of a guy and kick him out.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, but yeah. But then at the end they get back together and they are a unit again, and they like it's very like I found their characterization to be very good. In the sense that, like, their conflicts with one another are based on something that you could reasonably see any group of people dedicated to a cause or a goal would fight with each other. You have the guy who's willing to do anything, including lie about a child for the end goal, and then you have the guy who was like, "No, we have to be principled."
Yeah,
and then. Also, like, that relationship is not severed. It's actually joined together by the end of the movie. And they actually, like, kind of reach the conclusion that, like, we can't change anything right now, necessarily. Like, we can't do anything about this, but we can at least help this girl and help her save her pet or whatever.
Yeah.
And I found that, like, very... that was one of my favorite aspects about the movie, was that it just felt very, I mean, everything about the movie was very much like, oh, this is a side of animal rights that you never see.
But that,
especially the activists that are like, you know, goofy and certainly one could argue ineffectual, obviously, but
well,
like not
that's
bad
just it.
People.
Yeah, that's just it. You know? I mean, it's a flip of what we get in Parasite, where in Parasite, the solidarity is blocked. It's still structural and it's still about, you know, the context of people's lives. But, you know, in many ways, the solidarity is blocked by choice. Whereas in this case, it's like the solidarity falls apart, you know, still because of the structure, the huge amount of power that is, you know, opposing them, you know, but also by their... I guess like foibles and their weaknesses and not their poor choices, but just their incapacities. Like, it's a different kind of, they still fail, but they remain in a kind of solidarity. They don't actually lose solidarity. Yeah. Most of them maintain it throughout. So it's like, it's still Bong Joon-ho saying it's not going to work. It isn't going to work. Mm-hmm. You don't get excited about this Animal Liberation Front. You know, didn't you watch Snowpiercer? It's not going to work. And sure enough, it doesn't, right? But what it does do is you know, it maintains a certain kind of solidarity, which is, like, for him, relatively optimistic, like, more than most of the time.
Exactly, yeah. I quite liked Okja. Like, it really is the clearest example out of all of them of one specific thing ruining a movie for me. It didn't ruin it. It just greatly diminished... how good I thought it was. Snowpiercer, you could argue kind of the same thing, but the difference there is that it's not a movie that had one thing that fucked it up. It's a movie that gets to a certain point and then just falls off the rails.
Yeah. Yeah.
For me. Whereas Okja is like, everything in the movie is mostly pretty good. And then it has one narrative aspect that I just thought was like totally hack. What I will say about it, because I just want to put a pin in that criticism, is I think you could have achieved exactly the same message, exactly the same you could make people take away exactly the same thing from it. By, for example, just this is just an example.
Get the Jackson rewrite.
By having, let's say, I don't know how you would necessarily do this. You would probably have to plant the seed earlier in the film, obviously. Like, but it's not, it wouldn't be like that difficult. But you could achieve the same thing by basically, instead of her tossing her a golden pig that, yeah, she has to melt down or sell on the secondary market, the kind of thing that a CEO of a giant company just, I can't imagine would be bothered to do, by instead, like, groveling to a different rich person and getting that different rich person,
yeah, sure,
to kind of guiltily be like, all right, I'll buy your pig,
yeah,
your cute little girl, like, all right, I'll buy the thing, yeah, I'll pay an exorbitant amount of money for, like, because that's the other thing too, is like, the gold pig in exchange for the real pig or whatever, it's like, what's the, like, what are the margins on this? Like,
I think the super pig was just going to be meat, so it wasn't going to be worth that much.
I guess it couldn't have been worth that much, yeah.
Not as a slaughtered animal.
But it's still just, especially because she's supposed to be like Okja's also supposed to be like the best pig.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you'd think maybe there's more value to, like, oh, well, this was the best one, so we should like study it.
Well, I mean,
like,
they should have, right? Know, that's what the other one was going to do. Yeah. The other Tilda Swinton was going to. I mean, I'll say this. And I just should mention, Jackson, I got to go in about 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Here,
we're almost done. Here.
Yeah.
We have
so,
to
you know,
off, yeah.
To sort of pull together my thought about the solidarity thing, like, I think that, for me, that's the tension that runs through all of his films. And I mean, I don't think he's resolved about it, which is why his films are different and sometimes inconsistent. There's this question about when and how can the working class be in solidarity, and when and how is it atomized and fragmented, often into family units. He does a great job of having little family units that are solid with one another, but then cannot
his
be
solid. His
portrayal
of families is great.
Yeah, right? I mean,
like,
it's
shitty families that love each other. That's a very
exactly.
Good,
really good in Parasite. Really good in The Host.
Yeah.
You know, you could argue that Mija and Okja are a little family unit. So that's always the question, right? Is like, how is that tension going to be overcome? Are we as a working class going to be able to broaden our umbrella of solidarity beyond the family? And, you know, his pessimistic takes, like Parasite, they're hard. They're hard to watch. His more optimistic ones, like Okja, Okja has these moments. I actually think there's beautiful, the end, besides setting aside the pig thing, the end scene is really beautiful. When they break into the factory that is obviously like a prison, it's meant to portray a prison. And the interactions she has are all with, at first, they're all with workers at the slaughterhouse. And all the slaughterhouse workers are speaking Spanish. They're all Latin American. And they all, whenever they communicate with her, it doesn't get translated, but I'm fortunate enough to know a little bit of Spanish. So, like, they're all saying things that are not shitty to her, but kind of like, hey, be careful. You know, hey, it's dangerous in there. You don't want to go in there. Like, hey, maybe you should go home. I don't want you to get hurt. They're all saying things like that. Even the guy at the end, you know, who's holding the, I guess, like the gun thing that they kill the pigs with, like, he sees the picture that she shows her and he's moved by it. He stops.
The Javier Bardem gun.
Yeah, that's right. Totally.
From
No Country for Old Men. Yeah.
Or No Country, Old Country for No Men. Right. Yeah. All right.
But like, you know, they're all moved by her enough to rethink it, right? Not enough to stop entirely, not when they get the order from the boss.
No.
Right. It's like, you've got that limit. He's always reminding us of the limits of that solidarity, but he's not foreclosing it completely. And I think that, for me, is like the tension that I experience in all of his films. And I mean, I think it's a good tension for us to be thinking about, whether I end up agreeing with him in Parasite or agreeing with him in The Host, wherever we fall, like, that is arguably one of the biggest things we who are committed to, you know, an anti-capitalist project. That's the thing we got to figure out. How do we get everyone on side and stay together on it? So
sure.
I appreciate his films for that.
All right. Here's what I will say, to close off my feelings about him. I have perhaps given off more of a negative vibe than I actually have. I did not like detest any of these movies by any means. I wouldn't even say that any of them, aside from Parasite the second time around, which was kind of hard for me to get through, like I wouldn't even say that I disliked them. Like all of these movies for different reasons kind of fall firmly in that like 3.5, pretty good, not great realm of scoring for quality and enjoyment, sometimes more on the quality side, sometimes more on the enjoyment side. Like, you know, Parasite scores high on the quality side, but low on the enjoyment side versus something like maybe, you know, Snowpiercer or whatever, which up until that point was scoring really, really high on the enjoyment side, but the quality side maybe a little bit less. But my sort of, I guess, aside from the just obvious, like subjective, I enjoyed this versus I didn't stuff, I think the thing that bothers me across all of these movies, generally is the pessimism and the sense that for, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, but like for a guy who has achieved the absolute pinnacle of his field and achieved like the highest possible like expectations you could have for going into an artistic medium, both like financially and critically, at this point, it feels very easy for him to lean on that pessimism and be like, well, yeah, you know, better things aren't possible. Even like saying better things aren't possible as a socialist doesn't make it any better that you're saying better things aren't possible. And I'm not saying he's like definitely saying that, but that's the vibe that I get from watching his movies. That's a very easy thing to say when you're not going to be the one affected by that, really. And obviously, that could apply to like any director, any writer who's successful. But I don't know. I feel like at this point, this guy just needs to make like a less capitulating movie about class. That's less about how all of the working class people are going to fail and fuck each other over, and make something a little bit more triumphant. And then maybe
He's got to stop making Che Part 2 and start making us a Che Part 1.
Yes, exactly. And then maybe I'll change my tune a little bit more. And yeah, I mean, this is kind of the mirror image of our last episode, where it's me kind of saying like, it's not really the movie's fault. It's just a personal thing that I guess what I'll say to close it out is with it's a similar thing that I felt about the Florida Project, which I mentioned earlier, is like I watch these movies and I just think to myself like, yeah, I know. I don't fucking need you to tell me. I know it's like this. And sometimes I envision the audience for the movie being people that don't know that or need to be told that, and I just think to myself like, well, fuck, I don't give a shit about any of that. Like I don't need to be told this. And watching it take place over a 2.5 hour long movie or whatever can feel exhausting and can feel like you know, I would rather I would just personally rather watch like Django Unchained and just watch all the slave masters get killed. Maybe because I just have a stupid American baby brain and I want candy all the time.
It's a catharsis. It's I mean, we need that too, right? We do.
If that's what you think of me, I'm not gonna argue against you, but you know, what can I say? I like candy, and I don't like when I watch a movie and then feel depressed at the end of
Yeah,
it.
that's fair.
All right. That closes it out for today. I'm gonna let Tyler run along because he has a thing that he has to do. But thanks for listening, everybody. I may really be playing with fire by saying this at the end of this particular episode, but rate and review us on iTunes. Because it helps with the algorithm and all of that, or on your podcast app of choice. Unless you really hated this one because you thought I was wrong, in which case, don't do that. 5-star reviews only. All right. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Mm-hmm.